The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views of News Radio 830 KHVH, its staff, or management.
Now it's time for the Hawaiian Eye Show, sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better. This is your weekly informative hour all about eyes. Learn about cataracts. Ask a question about glaucoma. Find out how diabetes affects your eyes. Stay tuned for an entertaining and educational program about eyes and eye care. Call in to have your questions answered by the doctor. Now, your host, Harvard-trained eye surgeon, Dr. Christopher Tortora.
Okay, welcome everybody. Good morning, and it's time for the Hawaiian Eye Show. Sorry for that little gap there. Good morning, and it's our weekly program about eyes and eye show. It's called the Hawaiian Eye Show, and sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better. We're going to be here for the next hour talking about glasses and bifocals, about laser beams and eye surgery. We can talk about your cataracts or your contacts, itchy eyes, droopy lids, or whatever it is that interests you. If you'd like to join in today, give us a call. Our number here, 521-8383. We'd love to hear about your experiences and answer your questions. If you can't call in today, or maybe you're feeling shy, you can always email us your questions. Our email address is eyes@hawaiianeye.com, and we can answer those questions over the air in coming weeks. Look us up on the web while you're there at www.hawaiianeye.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Dr. Tortora, D-R-T-O-R-T-O-R-A. Or look for us on Facebook, facebook.com/Hawaiian Eye Center. If you go check us out on Twitter or check out our website, you'll see a link to a social media madness competition. If you go ahead and vote for us for a social media madness competition, we're trying to get more information out there in the social media realm. And so that would definitely be great. Go to our website, hawaiianeye.com, click on the social media madness link on the top right of the website, and then that'll take you to where you can vote for Hawaiian Eye Center and our social media outlets if you do like them. We try to tweet and Facebook interesting things, educational things, and entertaining things as well to keep you busy during the week when we're not doing the radio program. During the next hour, we're going to discuss eye news from around the country and around the world. Sometimes we'll do an eye quiz to test your IQ. We'll have a lot of fun today. Remember, there are sometimes a few surprises. Now, remember, all opinions expressed on this program are those of myself and the other medical doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center. I'm an ophthalmologist, or IMD, which means I'm a medical doctor specializing in the eyes. We're going to try to be very consumer-oriented today, make an effort to give you the best possible practical advice. But remember, since I can't see through the telephone, I may have to recommend an examination before I can tell you exactly what's going on in your eyes. Hawaiian Eye Center does sponsor our program today as a public service, so sit back, relax, and enjoy an hour all about eyes. We'd like to start out the program talking about some of the things that we've run into in the office during the week and things that we've gotten questions about. And one of the things that I did get a few questions about, particularly at a gathering that I was at just recently, was about a condition called pterygium. Pterygium is very common here in Hawaii. It's less common in other parts of the United States, and the reason is because it's related to sun damage, often exposure to the sun over quite a few years. So it can occur as you get older, or it can occur in young people as well who spend a lot of time outdoors. Particularly see it a lot in surfers because they're out in the sun where the ultraviolet light is being concentrated by reflections off the water as well as direct UV light from the sun. And this light on the surface of the eye can eventually damage the surface of the eye and lead to a little rough spot on the surface, usually on the inside corner over toward the nose side of each eye. It can be one eye, it can be both eyes. And once this pterygium starts to form, It often will cause a little growth over the surface of the eye. It looks kind of red and irritated and inflamed. So if your eye looks chronically red, particularly on one side, sometimes this is a sign of early pterygium. If you see a little growth or a kind of a fleshy-looking material growing over the surface of the eye, this is often a pterygium. Pterygium comes from a Greek root, which means wing, and so it's a wing-shaped growth. It's kind of a triangular growth. It tends to be thicker or wider at the base, which is on the usually on the inner corner of the eye, and thinner as it moves toward the center of the eye. But it does often grow over the cornea, which looks, when you're looking at it on the surface of the eye, it looks like it's growing over the colored part of the eye toward the pupil in the center of the eye. And of course, as you might expect, if a growth or a vascular material covers the pupil, it's going to block your vision. It's going to blur your vision by blocking light getting into the eye. So if a pterygium is getting large enough that it looks like it may start to interfere with the vision, then it ought to be treated or removed. So what about pterygiums? Well, first thing, you want to know how to prevent them or how to keep them from getting bigger or worse or bothering you more. So what you want to do is make sure you protect your eyes from the UV light, from the sunlight, when you're outdoors. And the best way to do this is with a pair of sunglasses that blocks UV light. Now, I'll say a good pair of sunglasses, but people are going to say, well, what do you mean by good? What represents a good pair of sunglasses? Well, good is anything that blocks all of the UV light. So if it blocks 100% of UVA and UVB, then that's a good pair of sunglasses. If it only blocks 50% of either UVA or UVB light, or both, then it's not such a good pair of sunglasses. So you want a pair of sunglasses that blocks the UV light. And the second thing that kind of comprises a good pair of sunglasses is a pair of sunglasses that protects your eye from light hitting it. And so if the sunglasses are really tiny, right in the middle of your eye, and light can still get in and hit your eye or damage the surface of the eye around the sunglasses, then that's not so good either. So many of these, what I define as good pair of sunglasses, would also have a little element to either be a larger size frame, or have a little wraparound contour so that it blocks some of the light coming from above and from the side, rather than just sitting out in front of your face in where light can get around it and still impact the surface of your eye. Now, UV light doesn't just affect the surface of the eye in pterygium. We are talking about pterygium now, but UV light also has been implicated in the progression or development of cataracts, of macular degeneration, skin cancers on the eyelids. Now, all of these things are often associated with ultraviolet light from the sun, and protecting your eyes from the UV light, of course, is important for all of these things. But let's get back to pterygium for a moment. So, two things that tend to make pterygium worse. One is ultraviolet light from the sun, so sunglasses for that. And the second is a dryness or irritation of the surface of the eye. So if the eye is dry, if the eye is irritated, that's going to cause a little bit of worsening of the pterygium. So you want to go ahead and not only wear the sunglasses, but also keep your eye well lubricated or well moistened if your eye does get dry and irritated a lot. And if you do have a pterygium, you want to use some artificial tear drops, moisture drops in your eyes several times a day to keep the surface of the eye moist, lubricated, comfortable, and less likely to promote the growth of the pterygium. So what happens if a pterygium is big enough that it's causing trouble, that it's interfering with, it risks interfering with your vision, or it's growing, or it's causing irritation or redness or something that is trouble for you? Well, a pterygium can be removed, and we can remove it surgically, and it can be done in the office generally. When a pterygium is surgically removed, there is a risk for regrowth of the pterygium. A pterygium does sometimes grow back once it's been removed, and so this is one of the things that needs to be addressed. You need to have a procedure done that helps to prevent the regrowth of a pterygium, and there are several ways we can do that. We can use medications at the time of the treatment to prevent the growth of new tissue. We can put what's called a graft to replace the damaged tissue with fresh tissue, usually from under the eyelid or else from external to the eye itself, what's called an amniograft, which is made from amniotic membrane material, and this seems to work well to coat the surface of the eye as well to prevent regrowth of these pterygia and to give a better cosmetic result where people end up with a more normal looking surface of the eye once it heals from the pterygium. Now, pterygium can cause scar tissue. It can cause scarring on the surface of the eye as well as on the inside corner where it grows, And these things can cause either noticeable physical changes in the appearance of the surface of the eye, or even can affect or impact the vision if the changes or if the scarring is far enough toward the center of the eye. So this is something that you want to take care of before it gets too super huge. Taking care of it may just be wearing the sunglasses and checking every 6 months, or taking care of it may mean removing it surgically. You want to make sure that you ask your doctor when they remove the pterygium. One of the questions that would be a good idea to ask them is, with the techniques that you use, what is your reoccurrence rate? How often do these pterygia come back with the techniques that you use? And how many of them do you do? And so typically doctors who treat a fair amount of pterygium do at least 10 or 20 procedures a year, because this is a fairly common disease here in Hawaii. All right, let's take a short break. And when we get back, we're going to talk about some eye news. And, of course, we'll always have time for your calls.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
When you have a cataract, your vision gets gradually worse over time. You don't see as well.
Having the corrective surgery and now having the vision of a much younger man, I can see again.
Our state-of-the-art surgery center offers safety and convenience without a hospital stay. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, HawaiianEye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C-2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
The Hawaiian Eye Show phone lines are now open. Give us a call at 521-8383 with your questions for the doctor. If you're calling from the neighbor islands, call us toll-free at 888-565-8383. Now, back to your host, Harvard-trained eye surgeon, Dr. Christopher Tortora.
And here we are. You're listening to the Hawaiian Eye Show. And if you do want to give us a call, talk about something here this morning, you can give us a call. 521-8383 is the number to reach us here at the studio. We have some news stories here. I wanted to talk about some of these stories that I've encountered during the week in the news. If you're interested in seeing more about these news stories, check out our Twitter feed a little bit later today. We'll often post information about where you can access some of these stories online on our Twitter feed. So twitter.com/Dr. Tortora. That's D-R-T-O-R-T-O-R-A. And see if you can find information about some of these news stories if they interest you. And here's one, the first one I want to look at. It says here, a safe, simple eye test may help save lives by preventing stroke. It says a simple eye test may someday offer an effective way to identify patients who are at high risk for stroke, according to researchers at the University of Zurich in Switzerland. They showed that a test called ocular pulse amplitude, or OPA, can reliably detect carotid artery stenosis, a condition which clogs or blocks the arteries that feed the front part of the brain. It's a known risk factor for stroke. This OPA test could be performed by ophthalmologists during routine exams. The study, which is published in the June issue of the journal Ophthalmology, and confirmed that the patients who had the lowest OPA scores had also had the most seriously blocked arteries. So the article goes on to say that each year approximately 795,000 Americans suffer a new or recurrent stroke, and more than 137,000 of these die as a result of the strokes. So that's about a sixth of them die. People with severe coronary carotid artery stenosis are much more likely to suffer stroke. Physicians would like to catch and treat this carotid artery stenosis before that can happen, but because it has no symptoms and an efficient test is not commonly available, the disease often goes undetected. So the Swiss research team used a device called a dynamic contour tonometer to check the ocular pulse amplitude in 67 patients that were assumed to have carotid artery stenosis. This OPA score was calculated by finding the difference between the pressure levels that occur inside the eye between two phases of the heartbeat, the systolic and the diastolic heartbeat. Okay, so the instrument actually measures this. Okay, so this instrument measures the two pressure levels and then instantly computes the patient's score, OPA score. When blood flow to the eye is blocked by carotid artery stenosis, there's not much difference between the two pressure levels, so the OPA score is low. The study confirmed that patients with the lowest OPA scores also had the most seriously blocked arteries. The researchers used ultrasound exams to corroborate that each study participant had carotid artery stenosis and to detail the severity of his or her blockage. Our results show that the ocular pulse amplitude is a reliable, safe screening test for carotid artery stenosis, said lead researcher Pascal Bruno-Necht. We recommend further study to confirm the value of using this. Okay, so this particular test, this OPA test, is widely used in Europe, apparently, but it's almost used very little or almost not at all here in the U.S. So this is something that, if it proves to be useful, may gain additional use here in the U.S. And I know it's something that I have not heard of or worked with, and so maybe something we'll look into a little bit more. Let's go to the phones. We've got Jan standing by in Honolulu. Hi, Jan. Welcome to the program. I'm sorry. Hello. Go ahead, Jan. You're on the air now. Go ahead.
Yes. I know of a person who's had cataract surgery, and she had the multifocal lenses implanted. And, however, she also said that these lenses are not covered by insurance. I just wanted to know whether is that because they're fairly new, and down the road, do you suppose that it'll be covered by insurance?
Okay, well, let me just, for other people listening, let me give just a little bit of background so I know what we're talking about. So when we remove a cataract, we put a lens implant in the eye to focus light. Everyone gets that. For some people, we offer a special lens implant associated with other techniques and procedures that we need to do to accomplish this, which is designed to give vision both for distance and near. And that we call that a multifocal lens. There are also other types of lenses that do the same type of thing called accommodative lenses. And these lenses all fall into a category of elective lens procedures done at the time of cataract surgery. Medicare and all other insurance companies have designated these as what's called refractive procedures, which are procedures designed to correct the vision, not designed to correct a medical problem. So a cataract is a medical problem. We treat a cataract to improve the vision, and most people who have cataracts removed end up with better vision. When we do add the additional work to put in one of these special lenses and do whatever other work we need to try to reduce the need for eyeglasses at that time, that is something that's not covered by insurance and probably never will be. So this additional lens, the additional work to correct astigmatism, additional diagnostic tests and measurements to assure the best possible result are things that are then paid out of pocket by patients who want to reduce their need for eyeglasses. Now, most people who have cataract surgery end up seeing well after the procedure for distance, but for up closer reading, the vision is not as good. And so for less dependence on eyeglasses, these special lenses and additional techniques I was mentioning are helpful, but they probably always will be an elective or self-pay procedure. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for your call. Bye. All right, we've got Connie standing by in Royal Kunia. Hi, Connie, welcome to the program.
Hi. I've had this problem with chelation in my left eye, and it's been since December. I've had operation on the eye and beyond it times two, and it just keeps coming back. I've tried the ointment and the hot compresses two times a day, and hot tea, they say, helps it. Do you have any suggestions for chelation?
Yeah, so chelation or chelation is the single, chelation is the plural. Is what many people refer to as a sty. So if that's in fact what you have, it's a clogged gland in the eyelid, and it should respond to treatment, medical, meaning hot compresses, drops, medications, or surgical, which means removing it. If you've had two removals and it keeps coming back and the area is still red and inflamed, then that could very well mean that there's something else going on besides the chalazion. And what I would recommend at this point is that you see an eyelid specialist, what we call an oculoplastic specialist. There are a few of them here in Hawaii. And you can talk to your eye specialist about that, the one who's been doing the surgical procedures for you. And what they would probably do is maybe do a more extensive removal where they'd also take a biopsy of the skin to see if there's some either inflammatory or even cancerous procedure process that may be causing that type of recurrent issue to be going on there. And so I think probably your next step after two reoccurrences and in the same spot, then I think the next step is you need to have a biopsy of the eyelid to make sure that there's not some other process that's causing this this to go on. Okay?
Okay, excellent. Thank you for your assistance.
All right. Well, good luck with that.
Thanks.
So the eyelid things, the chalazia, these little swollen areas in the eyelid, which are related to usually a clogged gland in the eyelid, most of the time are completely benign. They have no harm associated with them. They don't do any bad stuff to the eyelid or to the skin or to the eye, except that they can be a little uncomfortable. You can cause a little lump to form in the eyelid, which kind of can hang around for a while. And so these types of things, if that's all it is, generally respond to heat on the eyelid, hot compresses. About 95% of them get better with hot compresses. Sometimes injections into the lump or into the swollen area can help, or a surgical excision usually helps if none of those other things do. If that's not working or that's not helping, then sometimes that means there's something else abnormal about the eyelid that's causing the problems. And sometimes we can get a hint about that by looking at the eyelids and finding that the eyelash line, or the point where the eyelashes run along the edge of the eyelid, is irregular or interrupted in the area where the growth is. If it's just a regular sty, the eyelashes should be normal in the area of the sty. If it's something else going on in the eyelid that's not normal, then you may see interruption of the lash roots. The lashes may grow in or out or be absent in that area. And you may see other changes in the eyelid. The eyelid may be what we call friable, which means it's subject to bleeding or irritation when touched or rubbed or pressure is put on the skin there. And these are signs of something going on in the skin itself. And sometimes they do represent something like a localized cancer of the skin around the eyelid, or even a cancer of the glands inside the eyelid, a sebaceous cell carcinoma, which is actually something that does need to be treated promptly. So this is not something that I would put off. I would probably want to get it checked out and make sure that there's not something else going on there. All right, we were talking a little bit before about pterygium, about protecting your eyes from the sunlight, wearing the proper sunglasses. And so just as a quick reminder, what are the best sunglasses to buy? And you want to go into the drugstore or to the sunglass shop or wherever you choose to buy your sunglasses. And it's not a matter of what's on the price tag. It's a matter of what's on the identifying tag that gives you information about the UV blocking nature of the sunglasses. You want them to block 100% of UVA and UVB. Or you want it to say 400 blocking. It'll generally say 400 blocking or 400 nanometer blocking on the sunglass tag, or it'll say blocks UVA and UVB. Those are both desirable things if you're looking for a pair of sunglasses to protect you. You also want to make sure they fit your face okay so that they actually do block most of the light getting to the surface of your eye so that your eye is not being impacted by that UV light that can cause damage to the eye, things like pterygium, and can also lead to progression of cataracts, macular degeneration, or even in some cases can cause a higher risk for skin cancers around the eyes. We were just talking about that as a potential cause also of a reoccurrent lumps or bumps on the eyelid. All right, let's take a short break to listen to the news, and we'll be right back. Give us a call so that we can answer your questions after this break.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
Hawaiian Eye Center offers complete eye care for the entire family. Now, cataract patients can reduce or eliminate their dependence on eyeglasses with premium cataract care in as little as 15 minutes. Their experienced surgeons have extensive cataract and general eye care experience. And they proudly welcome their newest eye surgeon, Dr. Stephen Ree. Dr. Ree brings a wealth of experience to the Hawaiian Eye Center team. To schedule an appointment with a member of the eye care team, call Hawaiian Eye Center today at 733-2020 or visit the website at hawaiianeye.com.
The news authority in Honolulu is News Radio, 830 KHVH.
It's 76 degrees, partly cloudy in Honolulu. I'm Julia Norton-Dennis. Here's what's happening. European finance ministers are holding an emergency conference call today on Spain's ailing economy. Sweden's prime minister says there is talk of a bailout package of up to $100 billion, or in his words, one of the greatest financial rescue operations the world has seen. Activists say at least 17 people have been killed in the Syrian city of Dara in shelling by government troops, and the capital has seen its worst fighting since the uprising against President Bashar Assad's regime began 15 months ago. Residents of Damascus say shooting and explosions went on for nearly 12 hours. A man in his 50s was taken to a trauma center in critical condition after he was shot in a parking lot on Kapi'olani Boulevard and Kalaakala Avenue at about 5:30 this morning. Witnesses told police they heard one shot and someone calling for help. A man with a gunshot wound was lying in the parking lot between Club Roxa and Hawaiian Brian's. The suspect fled on foot. He's described as 5 feet 8 inches tall, weighing about 180 pounds. Firefighters have contained a brush fire that began at about 9 p.m. last night near Waipahu Intermediate School. The fire burned about 2 acres and there were no injuries. Investigators say the fire looks suspicious, but the cause is under investigation. Meanwhile, the fire that's burning all week in the Waianae Kai Forest Preserve is about 70% contained, and the latest count is 1,400 acres damaged by that fire and one that started in Lualua Valley and then jumped to Waianae Valley earlier this week. Island weather today, sunny and breezy with a high in the mid-80s. Tonight, mostly clear, low near 73. Tomorrow, sunny again. Currently in Honolulu, 76 degrees. I'm Julia Norton-Dennis.
Hawaiian Eye Center offers you complete eye care for the entire family. Now, cataract patients can reduce or eliminate their dependence on eyeglasses with premium cataract care in as little as 15 minutes. Advanced technology lenses are designed to provide good vision for distance, near and in between, with less dependence on eyeglasses. When cataracts blur vision, a short, painless procedure helps. If you have a cataract and want back youthful vision, call Hawaiian Eye Center at 733-2020 or visit hawaiianeye.com.
The phone lines are now open at 521-8383. On the neighbor islands, it's a free call, 1-888-565-8383. And now, here's Dr. Christopher Tortora.
Doctor, my eyes, tell me what is wrong, 'cause I'm wise to leave them open for...
All right, welcome back to the Hawaiian Eye Show. You're listening to Dr. Christopher Tortora, that's me, and we're talking about eyes. We've got program here full of lots of interesting information. We've had a couple of callers with good questions about eyes and eye surgery. And we also do have our program available online. If you go to hawaiianeye.com and click on the radio button, you can find out about Hawaiian Eye Center radio shows and podcasts, and you can listen to past programs. We do have all of the programs. I'm pretty sure that all the programs for the year 2012 are in there, so about 6 months worth of programs there. And we do have a podcast you can subscribe to listen to this radio program if you want to listen to it sometime other than the Saturday mornings when it's broadcast on the radio, or on the Saturday evenings that it's rebroadcast on the radio. So if you're listening Saturday morning and you have something that you'd like to talk to us about, give us a call. We've got a phone number here, and it's 521-8383 here at the radio studio. And if you're calling from the neighbor islands, they do have a toll-free number for you there as well. It's 1-888-565-8383, and we're here to try to answer any questions that you have. In the meantime, we're going to be talking a little bit about the iNews. There's a news story here about tricking a blind person's brain into thinking it's seeing things. Researchers have discovered how a visual prosthetic device could stimulate the brain to generate mental images. The blind person could wear eyeglasses with a tiny webcam that transmits data to a computer chip which is implanted in the brain. The researchers from the University of Texas Health Center and Baylor College of Medicine published their research in the journal Nature Neuroscience. The study, which was conducted by Michael Beauchamp, Ph.D., and Daniel Yoshor, M.D., involved three patients aged 18 to 47 who were being treated for epilepsy at St. Luke's Episcopal Hospital. It says, when people close their eyes, they're able to form mental images of things that only exist in their minds. In this study, the researchers found that a neural mechanism for conscious perception that could help the brain's image-generating ability. Dr. Beauchamp explained, While much work remains to be done, the possibilities are exciting. If successful, we would in essence bypass eyes that no longer work and stimulate the brain to generate mental images. This type of device is known as a visual prosthetic. Okay, so you're creating kind of a fake and artificial vision in a sense. According to the researchers, a blind person might wear eyeglasses that contain a tiny webcam that relays information to a computer chip implanted in their brain. This information would then activate the mind's eye. Dr. Yoshor said, with all the remarkable advances in computers and technology in recent years, the time is now ripe to develop a visual prosthetic. A key obstacle to progress right now is our limited understanding of how brain activity leads to visual perception. This new study is a step toward our goal of better understanding visual perception, so we're better able to make a useful visual prosthetic. So, it says vision and mental images are controlled by a region of the brain located at the back of the head called the occipital lobe. The electrical charges in the brain relay information among nerve cells. According to the researchers, electrically stimulating this region of the brain can trick it into believing it's seeing things that are not actually there. So that means you have to figure out how to get it to understand the image that you're tricking it into thinking that it sees. Okay, it's interesting. So it says in the study, researchers directly stimulated the brains of three participants in order to create the illusion of flashes of a flight of light called a phosphene. Currently, the team is only able to create one flash at a time, although several more flashes will be required to produce useful images. The authors found that participants were only able to perceive the flashes when there was also activity in another region of the brain called the temporoparietal junction. If there was little activity in this region, the participants never saw the flashes. They now plan to carry out a larger clinical trial and create multiple flashes of light at the same time. According to the scientists, these multiple flashes might allow study participants to see the outline of a letter, for example. Interesting. Well, this sounds like it might be a little difficult research to do because you've got to go probing around giving electrical stimulation into someone's brain. I don't know how many of you out there would volunteer to have someone poking and probing inside your brain. But with certain types of surgeries, certain types of surgical patients that have brain surgery, it may be very possible to go ahead and at the time of the brain surgery, where the patients often have to be awake because you need to be able to understand what part of the brain you're stimulating by having the patient conscious and not sedated or paralyzed. And so to be able to find out what stimulating certain parts of the brain does, they may be able to, during certain types of surgery, they may be able to create stimulus of various types. And so this may be an interesting way to figure out how to get the brain to see things that does not involve visual input from the eyes themselves. Boy, the implications of these sure could be interesting. I mean, think about it. If you could get an image from a webcam out of your, without using your eyes, you could have auxiliary eyes. You could have like a little device that you could throw or float or have fly ahead of you or somewhere else that could beam signals back to something implanted in your brain that would allow you to see things that were way far away from where you actually were. You could get a virtual image, essentially, of something that is remote from you or around a corner or, you know, somewhere behind your head. You can have eyes in the back of your head. Amazing. It's an interesting concept. Of course, the primary application for this would be for people whose eyes don't function properly any longer or whose optic nerves are damaged so that they can't get input from the eyes to the brain. And so all of the prosthetic devices that are currently being worked with involve using the normal pathways that the eye generally uses or normally uses to transmit vision from the eye to the brain. And so basically what the technologies are doing are taking advantage of what's currently hardwired in our bodies and augmenting that. So if the nerve cells that normally would perceive light are not working properly, we can feed the images or the information directly into the nerve in the eye, which then is transmitted to the brain, and so the brain is seeing it basically as input from the eye. What this particular device is, or what this particular experimentation is looking at, or study is looking at, is trying to create an image in the brain without actual input from the nerves that come from the eyes. So it's basically like a virtual image in a sense. It's like saying, well, we're going to implant this, the idea of this image in your head, and then you're going to see it like it's an image. So it's like when you imagine something, you see something in your mind's eye, as it were. There you go. Interesting study. So we'll have to see what comes of that down the road. Here's another study that article that I found this past week that is interesting to people, particularly people who have macular degeneration. Macular degeneration is a condition that affects the central vision as we get older. Age-related macular degeneration is a very common problem in older adults, and if this is something that is affecting the vision and the macular degeneration is associated with bleeding in the back of the eye, what we call wet macular degeneration, or wet AMD for age-related macular degeneration, AMD. If you have wet AMD, injections of certain types of drugs into the eye seem to have an effect on improving the status of the macular degeneration and getting your overall vision, even if not better, at least stabilized. And some people do get a little bit better as well. So this is important, an important type of treatment. There are currently three different drugs available for this type of treatment, two of which have been available for a number of years now. And these two vary significantly in price. And the question is, do they vary in efficacy or not? Is the more expensive one a better drug? So several studies have been done to address this. One was done in the U.S., which showed that pretty much both drugs had fairly equal efficacy or were equally effective in treating the wet macular degeneration. And this study that was done in Europe, so let me read the results of this study. It says ranibizumab, called also known as Lucentis, and bevacizumab, also known as Avastin, confer equivalent visual function benefits according to one-year results of the alternative treatments to inhibit VEGF and age-related choroidal neovascularization trial. Wow, that's a mouthful. Okay. The drugs were equally effective clinically in this interim analysis. The study is due to run 2 years. However, bevacizumab is a great deal less expensive. That's also known as Avastin. The researchers explained at the Association for Research in Vision Ophthalmology. Interim results were published online in May. At the end of the first year, the trial showed that ranibizumab and bevacizumab had similar effectiveness regardless of the drug received or whether treatment was monthly or as needed. Sight in the effective eye improved by 1 to 2 lines on a standard eye test. So the trial here is one of the largest ever conducted in the field of eye diseases in the United Kingdom. So this was done in England. And results mirror those of the comparison of AMD trial study conducted in the United States. So at least the two studies show similar results. That's very good. That shows that reproducibility. The study involved 600 patients, 50 years or older, with previously untreated neovascular major macular degeneration, or wet AMD, in the study, who were randomized from March 2008 to October 2010 to receive one of the two drugs, either given every month, or as needed with monthly review. So the results confirmed that both of them had a fairly close effectiveness in both groups of patients. The treatments were pretty much equally effective. There was no statistical significant difference between the two. And they found that other measures that they looked at did not see a big difference either. Okay, so said, although there's no functional difference found between the two drugs, one of them is considerably less expensive. It says here, and this is talking about Britain because this study was done in Britain, it says the National Health Service could save £84 million a year, which is probably like $120 million approximately, based on treating 17,000 eyes each year by switching from one to the other and administering the treatment on an as-needed basis. So currently, the only agent licensed in the United Kingdom to treat it is the more expensive version, and now there may be a change in the health system there. As we have to make a decision about what happens next, according to the researchers in the United Kingdom, and the government and the health system will have to decide what they want to do as far as the availability of these different medications. And so this is a similar type of thing that's going on in this country. In Great Britain and England, they have a different medical care system. Their medical care system is pretty much funded by the state, and everyone gets access to medical care. They have what is referred to as a single-payer system, meaning that their government pays all doctors and hospitals, and they patients have access to the doctors and hospitals that they want to go and see because it's all funded by the state. Doctors do also have private practices, however, and see patients outside of the central government system. So not everyone is subject to only having to go to see the government system. So in England, though, it is important for the government-based system to make a decision about things on a cost-conscious basis because they don't want to spend more money than they need to, especially with money so tight in all these European countries. And so they can look at this as a significant cost savings. We could probably also look at this as a significant cost savings in the U.S. Some doctors are very cost conscious and use the cheaper alternative when they feel that it's appropriate. Other doctors are enjoying the perks that they get from pharmaceutical companies, and they use the drugs that are more designer drugs that are promoted by the drug companies because the drug companies make more money that way. And I guess the doctors, in some sense, benefit as well. Of course, I think that that is not typical of most doctors. I know that in the press there is a lot of talk about doctors being in the pockets of pharmaceutical companies and doing things that are perhaps unethical as a result. And I think that that type of thing is the exception rather than the rule. All right, we're going to take a short break, and when we get back, we're going to talk about some more news. And, of course, we'll have the opportunity to take more of your calls. So give us a call, 521-8383.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
With the latest technology, cataract care is often a fast, painless procedure with a rapid return to normal vision and normal activities.
It doesn't hurt. It just takes, 15, 20 minutes the most, and you're out. That's it.
We strive to make your procedure safe and painless. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, HawaiianEye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C-2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
Life has never looked better with Hawaiian Eye Center.
The phone lines are open at 521-8383. And from the neighbor islands, 1-888-565-8383. Now, back to Dr. Christopher Tortora, our host of the Hawaiian Eye Show.
Welcome back, and here we are in the last segment of the Hawaiian Eye Show. And we do have some open phone lines. 521-8383 is the number to call to reach us here. And we are going to go to the phones and talk to Gary, who's standing by in Pearl City. Hi, Gary. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Tortora. Just a quick question about maybe once every 3 or 4 months, I wake up one day and the entire inner half of my eye is like bloodshot red. And it takes about a week to completely disappear. Can you tell me something about this?
And that sounds like what you're having is a little hemorrhage under the surface of the eye. We call that a subconjunctival hemorrhage. Conjunctiva is a thin, clear layer on the surface of the eye. And so because you're seeing blood under this conjunctival tissue, like it's a clear tissue, you're actually looking at the blood. And so it looks very, very red against the white of the eye. And this is often caused by coughing, straining, sneezing, other things that may increase the pressure in your eye and the blood vessels in the eye, rubbing the eye sometimes. It's unusual for it to occur frequently, except if people are maybe on anticoagulant medications like aspirin or blood thinners like Coumadin or Warfarin, Plavix, things like that. So are you taking any of those medications?
No, I'm not. I was taking, I guess, Coumadin for about a year, but that was like a couple of years ago, so not anymore.
Uh-huh. So that shouldn't really be a factor. You know, almost always these things are benign. Once in a while, we find that someone has maybe a little abnormal blood vessel or something that's causing a recurrent hemorrhage there, but there's really very little we can do about that unless we can actually identify specifically the blood vessel that is causing the problem and then cauterize it. But usually that's not very easy to do. So generally, since it's harmless, we just usually recommend people live with it. If there is any pain associated with it or any blurring of the vision, those are things that should be checked out by an eye specialist.
Okay.
Okay?
Thanks a lot.
Good luck with that.
Bye.
All right, so that's a very scary problem. You wake up, you look in the mirror, and you say, oh my gosh, my eye is totally red, like there's blood in my eye. And if the first time you notice it is when you look in the mirror, and otherwise your eye's fine, your vision's fine, it feels okay, then it's probably not too dangerous. If you wake up and say, I can't see anything, and then you look and you see your eye looks abnormal, then that's that's a sign to get your eyes checked right away immediately. But this little hemorrhage is one of the things that scares other people usually more than it scares the patient at first, because we commonly hear, oh, I came downstairs for breakfast and my wife said, oh my gosh, what happened to your eye? And the eye is all red, and this is a little subconjunctival hemorrhage, which is not dangerous, but which looks kind of like it should be dangerous because it's very red and bloody looking. So, oh my gosh, you have a bloody eye. But it goes away by itself. It can take about 2 weeks, sometimes up to three weeks, to fully improve or fully resolve that hemorrhage. Okay, let's see. We have an article here about mood and cognitive ability and sleep patterns in patients with Alzheimer's disease are improved after cataract surgery. Says patients with mild Alzheimer's disease whose vision improved after cataract surgery also experienced benefits in cognitive ability, mood, sleep patterns, and other behaviors, according to a study presented at the annual meeting of the American Academy of Ophthalmology. The study was conducted by a group of researchers in Paris, and it included 38 patients. All these participants exhibited mild dementia due to Alzheimer's disease and had a debilitating cataract in at least one eye for which they underwent cataract surgery. Postoperatively, the distance and near vision improved dramatically in all but one patient, according to the news release. At 1 month postoperatively and 3 months postoperatively, a neuropsychologist evaluated the patients for mood and depression, behavior, and ability to function. So looks like it helped. So 25% of the patients showed improvements in cognitive status or the ability to perceive, understand, and respond appropriately to their responding, according to the news release. We wanted to learn whether significant vision improvement will result in positive mood and behavior changes or might instead upset these patients' fragile coping strategies, according to Dr. Girard. And future studies, we intend to learn what factors specifically lead to the positive effects so that we can boost the quality of life for Alzheimer's patients, their families, and caregivers. So if you have a patient, a family member, patient at home who is suffering from Alzheimer's disease and their vision is also going downhill, that may have an effect on their mood and their ability to function. And improving the vision sometimes can make a difference, either whether that's with glasses or more commonly with cataract surgery to try to improve the vision. All right, we're going to go to the phones. We've got Jim standing by in Conneaut. Hey, hi, Jim. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, doctor. I have a question. You know, have stem cell research, is there any relation to optic nerve restoration?
That's a good question. Stem cells are cells which, when implanted in different parts of the body, may be able to grow into different tissues so that they can replace the function of tissues that aren't working properly. So far, stem cell research in the eye, as far as I know, has been focused primarily on the retina, which is the part of the eye that is commonly affected by a number of different types of diseases. But the optic nerve is also affected by certain types of diseases, by strokes, by glaucoma, and other things. And so I have not seen any specific research done on the optic nerve, but it does sound like it's something that is worth doing. So I suspect there's someone looking at it. It's just that they probably haven't had really positive results yet, which is why we haven't heard anything about it yet.
Is it, I know the offshore, you know, Switzerland, you know, they're doing more advancements with this type of research. Why not here in the United States?
Well, there are researchers here in the U.S. as well as abroad who are doing experiments with this type of tissue. There are some political issues in this country which prevent certain types of research with stem cells or certain types of stem cells. But there, but for the most part, the research that we're doing here is comparable to the research that's being done elsewhere. It's just that none of it has reached a stage where it's actually clinically applicable. So it's not something that can be used in practice. It's something that is still experimental.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Aloha. Well, we've been here for an hour now talking about eyes and eye care, and I've certainly had a lot of fun, and I hope you have too. I'd like to thank Mike and MJ for helping out here in the studio, and I'd like to say thanks to all you listeners for making this show work through your calls and through your letters. If you enjoy our program today, be sure to tell your friends about us. If you learned something new, be sure to listen again next week. If you have a question, you can always email it to us. Our email address is eyes@hawaiianeye.com, and we can answer those questions over the air in coming weeks. Don't forget to check out our website, www.hawaiianeye.com. You can subscribe to a podcast of the radio program. Click on the radio button on the hawaiianeye.com website. You can also follow us on Twitter, find a reference to some of the articles that we've talked about during the program today and in past weeks by going to twitter.com and looking for Dr. Tortora, D-R-T-O-R-T-O-R-A. Follow our tweets. You'll learn a little bit about eyes. Well, it's sure been a pleasure talking with you, and I'm Dr. Christopher Tortora. The Hawaiian Eye Show is sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, with offices in central Oahu and Hilo on the Big Island. Thanks for listening, and aloha.
You've been listening to The Hawaiian Eye Show, sponsored by the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, with Harvard-trained eye surgeon Dr. Christopher Tortora. If you have an eye problem, want to get a second opinion, or aren't seeing as well as you used to, make an appointment with Dr. Tortora or one of the doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center in Central Oahu or Hilo by calling C-2020. That's 733-2020. Until next week, here's looking at you.
When you have a cataract, your vision gets gradually worse over time. You don't see as well.
Having the corrective surgery and now having the vision of a much younger man, I can see again.
Our state-of-the-art surgery center offers safety and convenience without a hospital stay. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, hawaiianeye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C-2020. That's 733-2020.
2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
America's real anchorman, the truth detector, the doctor of democracy.
Every weekday morning at 10, KHBH Honolulu.
Hawaii's home for Fox News.